So what's it like, Melissa, to be a legend?
I don't know. I'm going to tell you, honestly, I can't even believe that they're putting me with that word. But I'm slowly coming around to, yeah, we created something really, really great that obviously is legendary. So I'm happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I've always wanted to ask you, because I've listened to your music on several occasions and stuff. And one of the things that I've always admired about your music, like two examples, okay? Do Me Baby and Do You Still Love Me? Completely different vocal styles. So yes. I mean they're like on the opposite end of the spectrums. Like Do Me Baby, I would say, is more of a sultry, soothing, almost a cabaret style, you know, like a soft performance. And then when you go to Do You Still Love Me, I mean, there's like total power behind the lungs. I mean, how are you able to do that as a vocalist? I'm not a vocalist myself, so I wouldn't know, but to me that's a true talent of a singer.
Well, you know, how I'm able to do it is that I approach every song differently. Each song has its own personality, believe it or not. Each melody, the music, the way it's flowing, what the instruments are doing, they all have their own personality in each song, in each deliverance. So it's important for me, in order to blend with that, to make a hit, that my vocals have a personality as well. So that's how I approach each song. What personality vocally do I need to have to make this song believable?
Now, do some of the songs, can you tell what personality they're demanding when you see them on paper? Because I know you write some of your own songs, and some songs are given to you and stuff. Is it harder when they're completed than when you're part of the writing process?
Yeah, it's definitely harder when you get it completed, because now you're changing somebody else's personality to make it yours. And as you know, that's very hard to do. When you get the music, it's easier, because then you can say, okay, I want it to go in that direction. Mm-hmm. When you get something that's completed, it's already in the direction that it's supposed to go. Now is how do you bring it in your words and in your deliverance into your direction, and what's going to work for you? Like Do Me Baby. Do Me Baby was already done, you know, when I got it, but they never let me hear Prince's version.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see where that would be kind of a challenge, because it must, from your point of view, seem like, okay, you're the actor in a movie now. You've got to make that character come to life, but that character's already been defined.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like that. Like if I played, I love Bette Davis and she did Mildred Pierce. If I had to play Mildred Pierce, I mm-hmm. couldn't play it like her.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, no, and on top of that, they're not letting you see her performance.
Right. So I had to come in with a clean slate with me and Paul Lawrence, with him just letting me, you know, hear it and saying, this is how it is. And I really didn't hear Prince's version until after mine. I actually was, you know, sitting around and somebody played it and it was on the radio and it was like, oh, this is Prince's version. I never heard his version before I did the song.
I know. Well, and it's not like YouTube was around back then where you could just Google it and then like hear it real quick behind everybody's back, you know?
Right.
But
yeah.
Did you ever get any feedback from Prince? Because I know Prince is kind of a stickler when it comes to his music.
Oh, of course. I seen him recently because I did my Unsung episode and we had to get approval for Do Me Baby to even be on the television show. And I saw him about 8 months ago and it was wonderful. But when I first did Do Me Baby, they invited me to meet him backstage at a Lionel Richie concert in California. And I walked up to him. We both had on leather. And I walked up to him and, you know, I was like, you know, hi. And he was like, thank you for a great song. And I was like, what do you mean thank me for a great song? You wrote it. It's your song. And he said, yeah, but you made it great. So that I'll take that to my grave. You know, I love that.
Wow. And that, I mean, and if you think about it, as critical as he gets on people that record his stuff, I mean, that's makes it even more of a more sincere, more of a compliment.
Yeah. You know? I mean, because he doesn't give those out very easily. So no. I'm honored to have one of the great ones that he mm-hmm. said. He said, I made his song great. So, like I said, I'll take that with me for the rest of my life.
Exactly. Now, what was it like having your life documented in Unsung, which is a, for those that don't know what Unsung is a documentary series on award-winning artists such as yourself that airs on TV1, which is an American television station.
It was really interesting, and it took me back to the beginning. I had to like research. It's very strange researching yourself, mm-hmm. you know. And I had to research myself, and it brought me to this place where I am now, that I'm really comfortable with who I am because of the work and the dedication and the experience and all that I did to get to be this person. And I really hadn't looked at myself in that light before, because you're so busy living the now that sometimes you forget about the, you know, the history. And it brought me to the point to where I had to appreciate and go back and learn my own history again. Like, wow, I really did do that. Wow, we really did have a number one. Wow, I really did work with that person. You know what I'm saying? And it took me there to say, you know, well, I'm okay with who I am now, because we're working so hard to be the best that we can now and stay relevant in this industry and have a record out and have people still love you the way they loved you before. And it's like, wow, I've had love all along.
Yeah. Well, and you know what else too? I think it's like when it's you and you're seeing a, you know, a documentary on yourself, I don't think we appreciate our own accomplishments as much as others do.
That's it. That's the word. Yeah, I do appreciate my accomplishments now. And I remember Oprah Winfrey said one time, you can't love who you are now until you know who you were before. You know, and we're so busy zooming through this industry. I tell people all the time, I don't even remember the success of Do Me Baby because I was too busy working.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're already on to the next single.
Yes. You know, so it's like, I don't even remember all the accolades. It's like, really? You know, mm-hmm. But now you can sit back and say, wow, there were some accolades, yeah. You know?
Exactly. Well, and also too, do you find it hard, like when they focus on the bad times, or like, you know, like when tragedy strikes and things like that, do you find that just as hard to deal with when you're seeing it on the screen?
I think that the hardest thing for me on the screen was just dealing with my father, you know, who passed away, you know, losing him. The bad things in this industry, I can, you know, brush those off because I recovered from them. And even when they were happening, I was like, I'm going to recover from this. So I'm not even worried about this. It's just something we have to go through in life. It was life experiences. But when you look back on it, I'm really blessed that I didn't have drugs and alcohol and, you know, bad marriages and beatings and, you know what I'm saying? I had a little stint with my marriage that wasn't good, and I got out. You know what I'm saying? I didn't stay. So I'm really fortunate that I didn't have as many bad experiences. I had a lot of great ones and a few bad ones.
Yeah. Well, I think in today's day and age, I've had a bad marriage myself. So when you have a bad marriage, I think you're in that exclusive club of 50% of the country. So
well, I'm engaged now. So
congratulations. Congratulations. So, yeah, I mean, but I mean, that's the norm now. I mean, like I said, I've been through that myself and stuff, and it actually helped make me who I am. But, one of the things that I was really impressed with is that you're also an accomplished business person. I would actually say you're entrepreneurial career. I hate saying that word because I always mispronounce it, but entrepreneurial career, you know, in some ways, you know, overshadows your music career.
Yeah, I think when my dad passed away, I turned around and looked at my life and I realized that there was nobody pro Melissa. The only person that was pro Melissa was me. And so I said, well, then if I'm the only one pro Melissa, then I'm the only one that should be handling Melissa. And so that's what I did. I formed my company, Asylum Productions, and I haven't looked back. And it was another person that taught me that, too, that a lot of people don't know. Whitney Houston was a great businesswoman.
Yes, she was.
People don't know that. She managed her career from day one with her team of people. She always had nippy management, and she managed her career from You Give Good Love all the way until, you know, the end. God rest her soul. And she always taught me, she said, you know, if nobody else don't love you and you love you, then you go with that. You know what I'm saying? And forget about the other people. You keep loving you and you keep striving. And so that's what I did. I started Asylum Productions, and I haven't looked back, and there was no one that can sell you better than you. And that's how I feel about Melissa Morgan. Nobody can sell Melissa Morgan better than me.
Now, one question I have to ask with you, because you're your own manager, you're your own producer and everything else now, right?
Yes.
Now, do you own all of your own songs? Because I've seen a million artists like fall in that trap.
Yes, I do. I just told someone, I said, I love the fact that Jay-Z and Mary and all these wonderful people, you know, have redone my songs in their way. And I love it when the checks come in.
Well, the reason I ask is because I'm a famous example, the Beatles and Michael Jackson. You know, where like Paul McCartney suggests to Michael Jackson, why don't you get into song publishing? And Michael Jackson turns around and buys all the Beatles songs.
Isn't that something, right? Yeah, I wish I had that kind of money.
Exactly.
But a lot of people, you know, you have to be business savvy. Save your money. I always tell all the artists, they say, what advice do you give? Save your money and know the business, because when you're up, you're up. But when you're down, maybe you're down, and you better have something to fall back on when you're down. You know, we all don't get that wonderful hype of having number one songs throughout our whole career. So, you know the business, know about mortgages, know about saving money, know about IRA accounts. We don't have retirement funds in the music business.
There is no 401k in the music industry.
Yes. Hello. And I tell people, so how are you saving your money? You know, save your money. I see people in this industry that I love and that I know go through renting apartments, you know, to being homeless because when they're not making money, you know, they wind up living with people. And it's like, why, when you had the money, didn't you buy?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And don't if you make a million, you can't live a million. If you make a million, live like you have 300,000, and then at least you have 700,000 more to live off of.
Yeah, exactly. Famous example of that. I don't know if you know who this person is, Duff McKagan, the original bass player for Guns N' Roses. When he quit Guns N' Roses, what he did was he took 4 years off and got a business degree from the University of Washington.
Isn't that wonderful? Yes, I'm constantly learning, constantly read. Yes, that's wonderful. You can never stop learning.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and two examples with you, I mean, like non, you know, that are non-musical, that, I mean, you have your own chocolate company, and then you also make blankets and scarves and everything else like that. I mean, that's,
yes.
How did that come about? Because that's like not in the music industry at all.
Well, how it came about is that my mom, God rest her soul, her last birthday, we gave her a big birthday party, and I wanted to, she loved fruit. She loved strawberries and all that stuff. And that was at the time they were starting the company Edible Arrangements. And I told my sister, I said, I'm going to make my our mother, you know, a big fruit arrangement. And, you know, she was like, well, go ahead and do it. And what happened? I brought all the fruit. I cut it all out and everything. And I chocolate dipped the strawberries and everything. And the kids were at the party. And I asked them to help me put the arrangement together. And we put this big arrangement together for my mother. And she loved it. And she grabbed my hand and she said, don't you ever stop doing that.
Nice. You can't go wrong with chocolate. Yeah. You cannot go wrong with chocolate covered strawberries. That is like my favorite thing in the world. Oh, man.
Yeah, so I went on and I told all my friends and I started, you know, saying, hey, listen, I'm doing this, you know, if you want it for your birthday parties, for your weddings, for your whatever, let me know. And it was just really just word of mouth. And I'm really happy. Like this year I did two weddings. It was really nice.
Nice.
Yeah. So I love doing that. And my blankets, I've always crocheted since I was 9 years old. And I really love making like big blankets. I used to make blankets for everybody in the family. And one day my sister said, you know, you should just, you know, let other people buy this stuff. And so now hopefully I've been doing it for a while and I'm doing a limited edition boutique line. And I'm hoping to launch it in 2016.
Now you've got other people making the blankets now, right? Because I mean, like,
no, that's why it's taken so long.
Are you serious? You do them yourself?
Yes, I'm doing them all myself. Yeah, that's why it's a limited edition boutique line because I can only make so many at a time. Right now, I'm making a pink and fuchsia one. It's like my fiance, because I told him recently, and Grace, he's like, you're not finished that yet. I'm like, well, look, I got to sing. I got to do fruit arrangement, you know what I'm saying? I got to manage, get this money in here, and I got to crochet. Give me a break.
Now I picture you at O2 crocheting while you're singing, like killing two birds with one stone.
Yes, I will be crocheting all the way over on the flight there, you know, while I'm waiting. I'll be crocheting, so I'm hoping somebody will get a picture of that, you know, see that I'm serious about this thing.
Man, I actually picture you doing it on the stage during the show, actually, you know.
No.
Hope nobody minds if I kill two birds with one stone during the show.
You know? Let me sit on this stool and say, do you still love me? Yeah.
You can have like somebody in the front row like hold the yarn for you and stuff, you know, like
money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about like the Great Voices of Soul, because this sounds like a hell of a show.
Yes. Now this show, I've toured with the Whispers. I've done shows with the Whispers. I've done shows with SOS Band. And I always tell people Patti LaBelle was there for me even before my first record deal. I used to be in a band with Johnny Kemp and Timmy Allen and all those wonderful people. And Patti LaBelle came to see us at the Cellar in New York even before we all were famous.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and came up on stage with me and sang Purple Rain.
Oh, that's one of my favorite songs, too. Another Prince gem, too.
Yes. So I have known her for many, many years. And even when Do Me Baby came out and I was looking for management, her and her husband were interested at that time in managing me. So I've known her for many years. I toured with Kashif, and we open up for Patti LaBelle in many cities. So it's been a 360 with me to get to the point to where I'm actually, you know, going to be on the stage with her again performing. And I'm very, very excited. She really is an amazing person.
And you know what the cool thing is, too? These are UK dates. So that begs the question, what are UK audiences like for R&B and soul?
Fool's Paradise, I have to tell you about that, is like an anthem over there. And it's popular here, but when they hear it there, they go into a whole nother state of mind. And I didn't even know that it was that big over there. And I think I love the UK audience because they listen more. You know, the stage audience, they already know the music, so they just want to get up and jam, and you know what I'm saying? You just sing and let them dance. But I love the UK because they listen and they do appreciate more the artistry. So they want to see what you're going to do with it live.
Yeah, it seems like they endear the song deeper too. Not cracking on American audiences because
No, not at all.
Yeah, because American audiences, they're more like they enjoy the moment and the song, whereas UK audiences, it's like earlier this week we were talking to somebody from the UK about the Maura Cam song Bring Me Sunshine, and it's almost like a traditional song over there now, and it's only, that song's only a few decades old, so I think that's what we're talking about here, is it's more endearing, you know, in the UK.
Yeah. I mean, they are sitting there waiting, like, you hit that note, we're going to give it to you. You know what I'm saying? So a couple of years ago, I had the pleasure of touring with Melba Moore, who used to be my manager through Hush Productions and all of that. Melba Moore was very influential in helping me get my first record deal and everything with her husband, Charles, at the time. So we did... London Cafe, we did Manchester, and we did the Keisters Festival. And like I said, it's just a different appreciation for the music. So I get it. So I understand what I need to do over in the States, and now I understand what I need to do over in Europe.
Now, do you have any plans to play any shows in the States after this, or?
I would hope so. The Whispers are always working. They work a lot with Stephanie Mills here. Like I said, I've done some shows with them, but their real package is the Whispers and Stephanie Mills. So if they break that, you know, maybe I can, you know, get up into some of those shows.
Nice. Well, because I think this show, I mean, I think this would go, you know, Great Voices of Soul would go great over here.
It would. It seems like a very, very expensive package over here. So I don't know, you know, if the promoters will, you know, bite at it, you know, like Europe did. And we'll have to see, because it's a very expensive package. And it's just a matter of, we need a Rhythm Nation or something like that to bring that to the States.
Mm-hmm. Even you know what go really good over here, you know, and you could even charge more for it doing this way. Like I'm thinking of Vegas residency.
Yes, did you hear Lionel Richie is coming to Vegas?
Yeah,
I'm excited about that. And I'm actually, my new single that we have coming out in about 30 days called So Good, we're shooting the video in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So we'll see. Vegas would be excellent.
It's good that you bring up your new single So Good. I mean, because that begs the question: are you full force coming back into the music industry?
Well, I really never left. I've just been doing collaborations. I did a collaboration with Najee on his last CD called In the Mood to Take It Slow. And that song was actually nominated for a Soul Train Music Award. I have worked with, actually, you say that name, Full Force, on their last CD. Me and Shell Pepsi Riley did a duet called Thank You for Leaving Me that Vivica Fox was a part of that did very well. I'm a part of a Christmas CD that's coming out called A Diva Soul Christmas.
Oh, nice.
That I think has Patty Austin and Jody Watley and all these wonderful people. I'm a part of that. So I really never left, and I've always worked. Recently got shows coming up with Atlantic Star. I just did a show in Atlanta with Kim. I'm always working. So I really never left, but this is my first single since my 2006, 2007 I Remember CD that I'm saying, okay, this is going to be a Melissa Morgan song.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean by full force. Because you just do so much. I mean, it almost is like, how many Melissas are there?
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. I like that. How many Melissas are there?
Yeah. Well, no, exactly. Because, I mean, you've literally got multiple careers, and each one of them, you could say, you know, at some points in time are the primary career. And it's just like, you know, it's like the perfect hustle.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like I said, I'm very strong with my writing and my publishing. So we make sure that that's intact. But this song, So Good, I'm very excited about this because this really is dance meets funk. I really call it, it's like the female Bruno Mars.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So, and I'm very excited. Lenny Fontana, who's a big house producer, he produced it and co-wrote it with me. And we are very, very excited about this song. I think people are going to be very surprised at the sound. And like you said, the new sound and the new personality, you know, that I'm bringing to this track.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the number of collaborations that you've done, if you could collaborate with any man or woman, living or dead, from any point in musical history, who would it be and why?
Marvin Gaye.
Yes.
You know, and that's so funny that you did that, because most people say, who would I like to collaborate with that's alive? And they never ask me living or dead. But if I could have collaborated with Marvin Gaye, that would have been the ultimate high for me, because he understood the artistry of vocalism. And everybody doesn't understand that, but he got it. He was the first one to, you know, record with himself and do multiple tracks, you know what I'm saying, with himself singing. And that's amazing to me, just the flowetry that he had working with his own voice.
Yep. Well, let me ask you this question. Okay, would it be Let's Get It On, Marvin Gaye, Midnight Love, Marvin Gaye, or What's Going On, Marvin Gaye? Which era of Marvin Gaye would you pick?
Oh, my goodness.
See, I'm a Marvin Gaye fan. It's good that you said that.
It would be during the sexual healing part.
So roughly early 80s.
Yes, it would be the sexual healing part, because then he was so comfortable with what he did as an artist that it was just like second hat. You know, I think the Let's Get It On and all that, I think he fell into all of that, you know. But I think by the time he got to sexual healing, he was very comfortable with who he was as a vocalist and as an artist. He knew exactly what to do. You know, he might have been nervous about it, because coming back, he wanted to make sure he had a hit, but he knew what to do. I think he worked with Harvey Fuqua or something during sexual healing, because he wanted the vocals to be a certain way, because he knew in his mind what needed to be done to make hits for Marvin Gaye. And that's the Marvin Gaye I would have loved to have worked with.
Yeah, he was such a good guy, too. You know, I mean, I love hearing some of the backstories, like from like What's Going On. I'm sure you knew about this, but What's Going On is actually a war protest song.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he was at his creative at that point, but he was still experimenting. You know,
he was finding himself, is what he was doing.
He was still experimenting. But by the time he got to sexual healing, I think if God willing, if he would have lived the next song, we wouldn't have been ready for.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's the sad part, because the sexual healing era, you know, which is AKA Midnight Love album, was his last studio effort.
Yes. Well, we wouldn't have been ready for what he had next, because he was somewhere else by then.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, that guy's the people a thousand years from now, he will be known as the Mozart of that era.
Yes.
You know, hands down, just hands down. But, what do you think, Melissa, where do you think, you know, soul and R&B are going from this point forward?
I think it's going in a good direction now. The for a minute there, I always tell people we lost R&B for about 15 years when hip hop and rap and all that music, we lost R&B. You know, they sampled a lot of it and it was still, you know, prevalent, but we lost the new creativity of it, you know, and now we're just getting back to the point where it's like, okay, we are creating new stuff on the R&B genre, on the soul genre, the Sam Smiths, you know what I'm saying? The Anthony Hamiltons. We are just getting back to the point, the Lettucees. We're getting back to the point where it's saying, okay, show me something new in R&B and soul. And we're going, okay, we got that. What Tyrese is doing, even though it's old, it's new, you know? And we lost that for a minute where we could be creative as R&B and soul artists. You know, there was like telling R&B and soul artists to go hip hop, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
you
know, that's kind of a sellout move.
Yes, our art form is totally different from hip hop and rap and all that. What we create vocally is totally different from what they do, mm-hmm. you know, and they do what they do well. Let us do what we do well. And they had stopped us from doing that for, I say, a good 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, and I think also the infusion of the boy bands from the early 2000s kind of just, you know, sterilized the music scene as a whole.
Yeah. But now you look at people like, you know, Justin Timberlake, and he don't want to be nothing but a soul artist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, because they're admitting to where they got it from.
See him on stage. You know, I have to, you know, my props, honey. I've got to take my hair off to him. Did you see him on stage with Charlie Wilson?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Amazing. That boy was like, I got this. I got this. Let's go. You know, so, it's good to see the artistry of R&B and soul coming back.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, and it's good to see it getting the recognition that it deserves after all these years, because it has been heavily sampled and it has been heavily borrowed and it's heavily influenced so many people in the last 25 years, actually.
Yes, yes. And James Brown's daughter, Deanna Brown, she's a good friend of mine. She just texted me today. She wants me to come in and talk to the kids at the Jam workshop, because she has the James Brown Music Performance Academy in Augusta, and I have a house in Aiken, South Carolina. And she is one of the ones that's fighting, you know what I'm saying, to keep the good music alive because of her father, you know. And I am so proud of people like her, you know, me, Lettucey, like I said, all these wonderful people who are fighting to keep, you know, the real good R&B soul music alive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's something that needs to be preserved before everybody dilutes it.
Yes. Amen.
So, well, thank you so much for doing everything that you do, Melissa. I mean, you are a living legend. I mean, and you've been a legend since, I think, your first single. So, you know, I mean, you were just talent incarnate.
Well, thank you so much. So, I'm trying to embrace that. I'm really trying to embrace that right now. And it's hard. I've always been one. It's hard to, you know, accept the compliment. I'm just like, oh, stop it.
Well, but here's the thing. Yeah. And that's what makes you a true talent is that there's a part of you that can embrace it. And that's where the talent lies.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you, you know, loving what I put out there, my accomplishments. I'm proud.
Well, thank you. You're going to be at the O2 Apollo Manchester on Friday, November 13th. And then SSC.
No, no, no.
Oh, really?
Yes, the Apollo in Manchester. Yes, on the 13th.
Okay.
You're right.
And then you're going to be on the SSE Arena in Wembley on the 15th. And then you're going to be at the O2 Academy in Birmingham on the 16th. So you got a full plate coming up here next month and a half.
Very excited. They're like, you know, we're getting our flights together. I don't have my flight yet. They're like, get that flight. Because we haven't decided whether we're going to come in on the 11th or the 12th, because so many people want to, you know, see me in person. So I think we're going to come in on the 11th and do our little PR stuff and get ready for the 13th, the 15th, and the 16th. So nice. Excited.
Now, where can we find you online? I know you're on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's all I have right now because I really use my Facebook as my website stuff. Anything that's going on with me is posted on there like 24/7. And I have a fan page as well, Melissa Morgan Fan Page 1. So we're not going to do another website until the single comes out. And we just felt it's best because I have so many followers, you know, on social media.